I love that Zach found an outside influence in Jason Roberts, but he didn't stop there. He seemed to know immediately that the shared language meant that they were on the same path and platform. He doesn't make Jason seem distant or place him on a pedestal. He saw him as a fellow traveler. How can I do this in my city? What areas need this? I thought it might be helpful for us to visit with Jason Roberts and to get to know him a little better. So I gave him a call.
I'm Jason Roberts, living in Dallas, Texas, based in Dallas, Texas. Have a project called The Better Block. I started in 2010 with some neighbors where we looked at kind of our city, our neighborhood, and we started trying to figure out ways that we could make it a place that was more desirable for the community, because we had a lot of things like wide, high-speed streets, and we had thin sidewalks. We had no landscaping. We had empty buildings, lots of vacancies. And we try to come in and figure out, like, how can we turn these places around to make them the kind of places we see in other cities that people love, and they want these destinations that kind of support, like, small local businesses and have, like, little main streets and cafe seating and things like that. And so when we started studying the problems in our neighborhood, we realized there was a lot of ordinances and zoning rules that made it either illegal or cost prohibitive to make our places come to life. So we had, like, zoning in our buildings changed from retail to light industrial, and we had streets that were converted into high-speed, wide, one-way streets so people could get out of the suburbs as fast as possible. And then we had a lot of ordinances, like it was either going to be illegal or cost-prohibitive to make our places come to life. So we had ordinances that said it was $1,000 in permitting to do flowers on the sidewalk, and it was going to be $1,000 for cafe seating and permitting, or $1,000 for shade awning. So what we did with the Better Block was we came together with our neighborhood and said, let's take a weekend and find out if we can just break every rule and law we possibly can to make this the kind of place we wish we always had.
Rules, laws, $1,000 fees, this is the kind of barriers that usually stop community progress. But there's a certain gutsiness to Jason, kind of like Zach.
We gathered our neighbors and we painted our own bike lanes. We thinned the streets ourselves. We painted murals. We added we took the empty buildings and we put the businesses we wish we always had. So we put in bookstores and cafes and flower shops and art spaces for kids. And then we printed off all the laws and the rules we were breaking. We invited our city staff and our mayor out to kind of see, like, look, this place is not working and we are frustrated and we want to see a change. And instead of going to jail, we fortunately the city staff and mayor came out and said, this is a much better way to build a city.
This is backwards from the way we traditionally think about community development. First change the ordinance, then the progress will come. Sometimes you need to just take the step if you want a better block.
And we did this temporarily, and again, we did it rapidly, and they started making changes. So we saw zoning change, and we saw a lot of ordinances change. We saw businesses that we made temporary become permanent. And then we developed it into this open source model because other cities wanted to do the same thing in their neighborhoods. So now we have a nonprofit foundation that we've created that where we get to do work all over the world and support other Better Block projects.
Let's not miss that moment. Jason discovered something special with the Better Block, but he didn't hoard that wisdom. He made it open source. That's incredible.
Amazing. And so you've been to this region through the ODA organization. You've been to Fargo and Bismarck and even Milbank, South Dakota. When you're not simply a speaker, when you're doing a workshop or when you're doing an intervention in a Better Block project, what does that look like? When you arrive day one, have you already done a lot of the homework, or is it a learn-as-you-go type process and engagement from the community? What does that work look like?
Yeah, so it starts really by going to, like, a neighborhood. We're often invited in by a neighborhood that says, look, we have problems and we want to fix things. We realize that we're stuck and things aren't happening, and we've done a lot of planning initiatives, and we've had a lot of just neighborhood meetings and discussions. So we gather that neighborhood together in a room. Actually, we typically go into a blighted area in the neighborhood, or a place that they know that they want this to be turned around. And we start asking questions, and very simply, like, what's wrong with this area? What's missing here? What would make this better? What do you love about it? What don't you like about it? So neighbors kind of come together, and they start kind of putting down whiteboards and start coming up with all these ideas and things they wish they had. And the nice thing is, too, we get out of the the town hall format, out of city halls, and we take them right to the areas where the problems are. So you're not getting kind of these abstract notions of ways to fix an area. It's more very specific.
That's an important note. Be specific. Very specific.
Like, people can see that those windows are broken. That paint is peeling over there. There's no business. These are vacant buildings. And then we start trying to find out, like, okay, these are, let's say, the 5 or 10 things that were themes that kept coming up that you wanted to have happen in your neighborhood. What are the assets? What are the skills we have here? And so we start kind of making, like, this menu of resources. So we'll say, like, well, you know, we have lots of old pallets that can be deconstructed and used for wood for construction. And we've got people in our neighborhood that are great at cooking or great at graphic design. And so we start mapping all of that out and trying to tie together the assets and the resources to the needs of the neighborhood.
What do you hear there? He asked the question, what are the things we have? Do you hear it? The voice of abundance.
And then we set up kind of a rapid roadmap and time frame for these things to get laid out. So we'll say, okay, let's, in 90 days, what are we going to do to kind of fulfill some of these ideas or these dreams of the neighborhood? And so really, the magic of the project is making everybody work really quickly.
This is an important part of Jason's secret sauce, that the magic in the process is making everything work really quickly. The other side of that is blackmailing yourself. 90 days, it's going to happen. We often have really great ideas, the best of intentions, but we don't take that step of putting it on the calendar. Jason does.
The idea that is to get them around this idea of coming up with worst case scenarios, which will often happen, or coming up with any kind of roadblocks that people will put up and just saying, look, we're already on the hook. We publicized this date. It's going to be this thing. And it makes everybody work quickly, and it makes everybody work together, because you have to work together at this point, and you get to know your neighbors really, really well. And things start hitting on the ground. And like I said, oftentimes they start off as temporary, but little things kind of bubble up from that. And, you know, what the big thing is it's raising the social capital of the area, which you need that in order to start any project, right? You need the community talking and getting to know each other and rebuilding trust and figuring out what's their shared humanity? What's the things that we know we want to have better in our neighborhood? We know we all have kids. We want our kids to feel safe. And we've got grandparents, and we want them to feel like they have a place that they can go because they're retired, but we want them to feel part of the neighborhood as well. If we know we all have these shared things and needs, what are we doing together to make sure that we can make this a better place for all of us?
Jason brings up the idea of social capital. It's an idea that is very important to me and my working community, and I want to make sure we have a shared definition. So, social capital, the network of relationships among people who live and work in a particular community or society, enabling that society to function effectively. I like to think of it as the value that's tied up in all of those relationships, personal, professional, communal, within a community that make us human.
One of the things that Zach and I had a chance to talk about was that he finds that there's this public-facing layer that often looks like a block party or looks like a city-wide level. And then there's this secondary layer for him that's about more fundamental change, the way people perceive things. Maybe he brings them for the block party, but then he's able to test out a new parking layout or something. Do you approach your work in the same way? Is there this kind of basic level of completing and building blocks, but also a more subversive kind of changing of hearts and minds?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you've hit right on it, where we go in. Oftentimes people don't realize, even with a better block, that we want to be available to a lot of people that maybe weren't in the planning session, just like having them fall into this new environment that's been reshaped temporarily, and people will start commenting on it. So like, let's say we take a block and we bring out, you know, a lot of trees to shade it. We bring out cafe seating. We make like a little cafe with a neighborhood. It's a little bit subversive in the sense, because there's a lot of the people coming to this that weren't part of that. They're just like, this is amazing. They're taking all these pictures and they're talking to people in the neighborhood, and then the businesses that are already exist in the area, they're getting the spillover effect because there's more people coming out to this space because it's more beautiful and it's more inviting. And then at that point, it's a lot easier whenever you have to queue up changes, usually at a, you know, at a city hall level that says, like, look, we have restrictions on cafes and we have restrictions. And then, like, and then we can kind of go to the city hall, like, well, look, we just had that weekend when we did all this activity and programming and we rechanged the landscape. And people loved it. It was very successful. And those little tiny like gatherings, what really were used as kind of the data that because in the end we found that for a city, nothing matters unless it's been counted. So we basically created an event or a party to start counting and gathering metrics to show how people really use space and how to make it better.
At this point, I hope you're hearing it. Zach and Jason are virtually indistinguishable in their language. One is working in urban Dallas and other metro areas. One is working here in Sioux Falls and rural communities throughout the region. And yet the work is the same. Still, I wanted to know a little bit more. And so I asked Jason what advice he might have for bringing his work to smaller communities.
So you visited Milbank, which is 3,300 people, about a little over a year and a half ago, and we saw some really direct impacts as far as ripples from that session. You're going to visit Aberdeen, South Dakota, which is a little larger, but for an event called Rural X later this year. Tell me a little bit about how this work can exist in small towns or rural communities. How do you see it applying when it's not in a significant metro area, but maybe is in a little bit off the grid or off the main road?
Well, first of all, I'd say like the interesting, I think in a small town, you have a lot better ability, I think, to connect people because people think that in a big city that just, you know, you have so many people and so many resources, it's easy. But the larger the city, the more lonely it can be because if people are kind of in these bubbles where they're afraid to communicate because they're just they're passing so many people regularly. Where in a small town, I found people are okay with the concept of relying on each other and helping each other out. But also, it's, you know, what I love, especially when communities are kind of more of a farm-based rural community, they are very used to like building and making things together and using these, you know, a lot of the equipment we'll get are from feed stores. Like we'll bring horse troughs in that we're making water fountains out of. And there's a lot of equipment that's used kind of in an agricultural means that has to be large scale that can be easily deployed into a neighborhood or in a small neighborhood main street or something. And usually the neighbors in the community know how to like do like light things like welding and general like metal fabrication that can be used to help build a better community. And I find it's a lot easier in these rural communities. But the other thing too is one of the big inspirations for me for Better Block started from driving through my parents' old small towns in Oklahoma where they grew up, which my mom was from a town of 700 people and my father was a town of 5,000 people. But I would drive through their little main streets because they all have these little main streets of small zero lot line buildings built to the sidewalk. And most of them were empty. And when I drive through with my parents, they would talk about how like, yeah, this is where the pharmacist was. We all knew the pharmacist and this was the little diner that we all went to. And this was the little bookstore we all went to. We gathered here. And this is, you know, all these merchants would put the parades on. We'd have our parades here. So kind of being embedded in those small towns of 1,000 to 5,000, that really made me realize like, you know, you could do this anywhere. And this is what, you know, everyone has the need to gather, even if they're, especially I would say in a rural environment where there's more probably social isolation. You know, this is the idea of creating the farmer's market where the farmers all come into town together. And that was a place where everyone got together and celebrated, you know, and it had, you know, kids got to play together and juniors got to see the kids and all kinds of great things. So I think it's almost easier to see projects stick and get on the ground in these communities because of the resources.
In the midst of all this great conversation, I had lost focus on what I had actually come here for. Advice for Zach and other community builders like him.
If you had a couple words of advice or encouragement for Zach DeBoer here in Sioux Falls, or you know anyone looking to make their block or their community better, what advice or encouragement would you offer them?
So the big thing I tell people is just to show up. And I talk about this quite a bit in presentations and all. It's like, I remember when I was first trying to get started and I didn't know anybody in my neighborhood, no friends here or anything. I just started attending every meeting, from TAs to Chambers of Commerce's. I joined Kiwanis clubs and Lions clubs. And so I would say at the very beginning, just show up to everything and just listen, get a lay of the land. start understanding what people are, the problems are, understanding who are, because there's this small group of this cadre that is always showing up. And you'll see them, they tell me the usual suspects. And the thing is, if you're not at that table, then they're the ones that are going to be driving the boat. And sometimes, and this isn't always bad, but sometimes they're not the ideas people. They're just very dedicated. They were raised in a kind of a very highly, like, be a citizen kind of environment. So like maybe their parents were very civically minded or something like that. And I jokingly tell people, like, if you don't show up, the people that maybe you don't want will show up, and they're going to start dictating the way things should be. So, and oftentimes our frustrations are the opportunities for us to plug in what our passions could be. So my frustration was I didn't have, you know, this little great neighborhood spot for us all to linger and have a cup of coffee and ride bikes and things like that. So it's like, go to these places, hear the neighborhood's frustrations, understand your own frustrations, and then realize, like, how can I gather a community together and start tackling our problems together? So showing up, that's the big one.
The good news is Zach and people just like him in rural communities all over are already showing up, and our communities are better for it. Thanks to both Zach and Jason for the conversations and for what they do to make our communities better. As longtime listeners know, and if you've heard one episode, you're a longtime listener, you know that we end each and every gathering of the Potluck Society with a small action, an antidote to apathy, and I'm excited to share today's action. I want you to write a love note to your community. That's right, you heard me correctly. I want you to sit down and write a love note to your community and leave it in a public place. Now, this might mean writing it on a chalkboard at a coffee shop or pinning it to the bulletin board at the grocery store or just leaving a short note on the table at a local cafe. If you want to go big, and I'm sure you probably do, you might even just write a letter to the editor of your local newspaper. Sit down and write about what you love about this place and why this place helps you do your work and live your life to the fullest, and then leave it somewhere. If you're feeling particularly ambitious, I'd love to see a photo of the note or a transcript of the text. Post it anywhere, somewhere online, and use the hashtag PS002 so that we can all find it. That's it. Get to it. Thanks this week to Carl Koiser on the audio, Pony Creek Studios for our new theme song, Local.
Hi, you've reached Zach DeVore. Sorry I missed your call. Please leave your name and number, and I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thanks.
Hey, Zach, this is Hugh. No need to give me a call back. I just wanted to give you a call and say something I probably should have said somewhere else along the way, but thank you. Thank you for being someone that shows up for the community and that shows up to make this place a better place to be. I sure appreciate you. Have a great week. Bye-bye. And to my family, Amy, Emerson, and Finn, for inspiring me each and every day. Thanks as well to my dad, who now knows that every time he picks up the phone, he might just end up on the radio.
No, I like the Rushmore giving it publicity, because to me, it's just what makes us special.
Thanks for joining us here at the Potluck Society. We hope we'll see you soon. And as always, don't forget to bring an idea to pass.